you, Director Simpson, for coming back for State Parks. And Dominic, if you'd like to introduce yourself and go through that project, and if you want to do an overview, that's good too.
Thanks, Madam Chair. With your indulgence, first of all, Sarah Needles came back, and she was looking into how we might be able to accommodate tours of the Pacific Building. This is the archive storage space. And so if we could ask her to explain how we would do that.
Yeah, Ms. Needles, and why don't you use one of the microphones? You can just go over there to Senator Hastert's desk and push the button.
Madam Chair and committee members, I just wanted to offer to give tours to anyone who would like to see the archives storage facility. And if you want to see the museum storage facility, I'd be happy to give those tours as well. I can do that at 7 o'clock in the morning. I could do it during lunch breaks. I'm certainly willing to accommodate. I think it's important for people to get an idea of what these spaces look like in order to understand the bills. So I have left a stack of business cards over at the desk, and it has my email and phone number, and I'm happy to accommodate anytime and just meet people over at the Barrett Building in the lobby and pick you up and take you out for a half an hour to an hour.
Good. Thank you, Ms. Needle. All right.
And Madam Chair, it's always we take these photos for granted here, but since we're talking about archives, I thought I might point out that all of these are from the archives, and they are the Stimson photograph collection. And we're happy that the archives is able to lend these out so they're in public view. And Dominic Bravo is our administrator for the Division of State Parks, Historic Sites, and Trails. The supplemental budget requests for his division begin on page 19. And Dominic, did you want to do a brief overview of your division?
Sure.
Good morning, Madam. It's good afternoon, Dominic.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee members. As Director Simpson briefly went over this morning, I'm the administrator over the State Parks, Historic Sites, and Trails for the state of Wyoming. Overlooking, we have approximately 11 state parks, 22 historic sites, a couple of archaeological areas, including a site that has petroglyphs, a recreation area, and then just a slew of other types of areas that we manage, including even like monument and marker areas, you know, one acre type parcels of land. On the trail side, we're in charge of all the snowmobile and OHV for the state. We work with federal partners to provide grooming of snowmobile trails, and then we oversee the recreational trails program funds, which is called the RTP granting, and we do that granting out funds for recreational trail purposes and the Land and Water Conservation Fund, in which case we grant back out to communities for everything from building ballparks to trails pretty much in every community in the state of Wyoming. So that's a pretty quick, fast overview. I know Director Simpson went over briefly. Some of you folks had this handed out to you, I think maybe the second day of the session, and that just goes over our economic impact. It does not include what our trails bring in, so we're currently working on our snowmobile and OHV and non-motorized trail impacts for the state, but that also brings in a lot of revenue in taxes back to local communities in the state of Wyoming. Before I get into our supplemental budget, just to, if it's okay with the committee, one brief handout that I just passed out recently, and some of you folks have seen it already. We talked about it last session was to talk about the Joint Appropriation Committee interim topic about adding law enforcement park rangers to the Highway Patrol, Game and Fish Warden, Criminal Investigation Retirement Program. I realize it's kind of one of those conglomerations over the last 10 years that this has been attempted in different iterations, but I guess my hope is that there's different scenarios, but ultimately the biggest goal is to get the positions that provide law enforcement into some type of retirement program before something horrific happens out in the field. Many of you may know that one of the rangers in Utah State Parks was shot in November. He was actually shot while he was just doing a welfare check that we do many times here in the state of Wyoming, just checking on a vehicle, and he was shot. He is recovering. That's one of the silver linings. And the other one is that Utah actually does cover their state park rangers under some type of law enforcement retirement, which includes that disability piece. And that's really the biggest part that we're concerned about, is being able to provide for the disability of our law enforcement folks. I realize that you know, going through the whole process, there's a lot to consider. But just with the information, you know, please let me know if you have questions or comments or concerns. But as you folks look at retirement issues, I just hope that You're able to kind of look over the information we provided and have also talked about in previous dealings with this situation and this topic.
And, Mr. Bravo, we'll make certain that you get that information to the Retirement System Board and their staff for their review also as we move forward. At this point, the discussion has been that we would possibly take up the entire retirement system issue as our interim topic for JAC. So we are to have some meetings possibly in gathering that information and working on that in March.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chairman, for your consideration of that. These post-certified officers are so crucial to our state parks. Glendale on the 4th of July becoming the fifth largest city by population in the state of Wyoming. These folks are in the same kinds of situations as any other peace officer, and right now the situation is a disincentive to recruiting the folks that we need to be able to manage those places. And, Madam Chairman, our first supplemental budget request is our number two priority. I consider this to be an emergency situation, and I know I don't need to spend a lot of time convincing all of you about the devastating impacts of the pine beetle situation in the state of Wyoming, and we've now have a situation where the pine beetle is starting to have an effect on a lot of our state parks, Kern County State Park, Guernsey State Park, Glendale State Park, and we don't have the adequate resources to at least be able to do enough mitigation to protect the keystone species and the most important places in these parks that are so characteristic of the sense of these settings. So this is an attempt to at least get some resources on the ground right away this coming season so we can begin to address this situation. Dominic.
Madam Chair, Director Simpson basically covered what that piece is for. In the past, we've worked with being able to find resources with the State Forestry and the U.S. Forest Service, but, of course, those agencies are now hard-pressed to be dealing with the situation themselves. So we found ourselves last year trying to clamor for funding that we don't have in our budget since we've already flexed or kind of gone to the limits with what we currently have. Just to be able to save some of those important species around campgrounds and trailheads. And with the current funding of what was in place, that's about all we'll be able to do this go-around.
And, Mr. Bravo, my understanding here is that your original request was at the $185,000, and Governor Friedenthal had recommended the $85,000. So this is just a start on this mitigation process.
Madam Chair, that's exactly all it would be just the locations we talked about, trailheads and some of the keystone species around campgrounds. The larger amount of the funding would have been to be able to actually go out to then some of the viewshed pieces that we're still going to try to figure out a way to do it, we're just not sure exactly what resources we'll be able to get to do some of the other areas.
Okay, good. Thank you. And Senator Von Flatern?
Thank you, Madam Chair. If you were to receive this $150,000, could you spend it between now and next budget session?
Madam Chair and Senator Von Flatern, basically what it is the way we set up is to be contracts in place for those areas. And in all actuality, it'll be spent and put in contract before the July 1st, although obviously we wouldn't ask for any earmarking. But the way it has to work is we have to do the spraying and the removal in late April, depending on weather, May and June. Because by the end of June and early July, these beetles are already going on to the next tree. So to treat what we want to treat, we have to get in there this spring. So the plan is that if this makes it through, and you know, budget bill in March, we'll actually start putting the contracts in place to get it corrected. So,
Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. From my memory of discussions we had in the Ag Committee over the interim and last year, there was, I can't remember the amount, but there, I remember that there was a federal money that was designated for beetle control that the state forester had control of. Is any of that available to you on the state parks?
Madam Chair and Representative Wallace, the way it spread out is we asked about those pieces, and the best they could do is actually come on and assist us with the actual, I guess, planning of the mitigation piece, not actually implementing any of the plans. So none of the actual spraying or removal of any of the trees or anything to that effect. But it was that they would assist us in the planning pieces as we move forward. But that's all that funding would be utilized for. But they have millions upon millions of trees they have to try to take care of. So.
Mr. Bravo, within the state's park system, have you put together a plan for the beetle removal as to what is being attacked and what the total budget is? Or are we just seeing a small part of that?
Madam Chair, some of it is being done in-house, and that's part of the difficulty. That's why it became an emergency as we move forward. We had some of the forestry folks come in to Kurt Gowdy and Guernsey, and then the Conservation District also assisted us at Kurt Gowdy. So each park has their own plan. Now we're just trying to coalesce that into one larger plan. So funding-wise, this is just to get us through this emergent year to get those species that we know we're going to lose on the tree. They literally mark the trees of the areas that we'll lose, like especially at Guernsey is one of the largest ones that we'll have issues with. So.
And possibly we need a better global view of the state parks and the issue at hand as we move into markup and to see what we're looking at. Maybe we need a time frame, too, as to how long. I mean, we all know that this is an epidemic with our trees within Wyoming, but possibly you could give us a little more information on the status statewide.
I will do so, Madam Chair.
Thank you. If you have any of that information, Dominic, before Thursday of this week, that could be helpful.
Okay. I will do my best.
All right.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The next supplemental budget request for this division is on page 20. That's priority number overall number 4. And that is a request for supplemental funding to allow us to keep up with increasing utility costs for the division. Everything from toilet vault pumping, trash collection, and utility costs such as natural gas, propane, and electric. By virtue of the 10% budget cut, we're basically back to 2005 funding levels, but costs continue to go up for these services, and that we can't keep up with that. So that is the purpose of this request.
Madam Chair and committee members, as we look through and even looking at the governor's recommendations and in speaking with ANI, I was trying to do research myself and working with Brian, and it is accurate to say that in the 09 and 10 standard budget, we received $100,000 and $210,000 for fuel and supplies, but the $200,000 in utilities that we requested was left off of that piece. Moving forward in the 2009-10 supplemental request, that's when we had the large one that you may remember that was the $914,000. That included, of course, fuel prices were huge that during that time. And the governor's recommendation was $280,000 in one-time funding for utilities. And he said to come back to him and you folks, which basically would be this next standard or this next supplemental budget request after we had examined what the cost was to the agency. Then in the 11-12 standard budget, we did ask, but it was for startup funding, which included utilities at $20,000, some MVMS, and a land lease increase by state lands, which was about $41,000 ongoing funding. And then this last supplemental budget request, which was $125,000. Taking into account the 10% budget reduction at $697,000, that basically wipes out anything that we would have got in the 09 standard, which was the $310,000. Which, again, was no utilities. That wasn't a utility request. That was just toilet paper and everything else. And putting us back to the 05-06 level. So really, and I guess just as an anecdotal type thing, we were meeting with our senior management team, region managers and park superintendents and folks, and we kind of said our budget doesn't look good. We funded utilities to the maximum of where our budget comes out. We said put all the money we can to utilities to hopefully make it through the biennium. And they said, well, that only leaves us about $200 or so to run the parks and sites each month. I don't think we'll make that. And that's basically where we're at once we fund utilities. And again, utilities is everything you can think of in a park. We're like a little town in itself, and we have fuel and propane and electricity. I mean, we have all the infrastructure needs that, you know, to grade a road, we have to put diesel fuel into the grader, all those things that go into running a city. Each of those little parks and sites are kind of like that, and that's why the utility costs are so high for us, and a fixed cost at that. But that's why you see this request before you, and I'm sure many of you folks have seen the bill that's the state park user fee, registration fee bill, and may have had calls on it, and that was our other way of trying to address this issue without coming to you folks. But that's kind of the budget situation we're in, is we just can't make it to the end of the biennium in our current state.
So, Dominic, the last resort is then to close a park if you are not able to provide the utilities or the cost of doing business.
Madam Chair, that's a definite possibility.
So I think what's important here is that you probably need to do a spreadsheet on your utilities and maybe that historical perspective, if you hadn't already given us a handout on that or have one prepared.
I wanted to do that one.
And while you're looking at that, Senator Von Slatern, you have a question?
I was going to add to that about the spreadsheet, Madam Chair. I'm just curious on the toilets, pumping, the trash collection, which is your sanitation company, I guess. Do you sign just seasonal contracts? Do you sign it matching your biennium budget? And that I definitely would like to see separate from what utilities are.
Dominic.
And Madam Chair and Senator Van Flattern, the one concern with that is actually if you look at the total, our contracts have come down because we drop services. The only way, like Glendale, we had to actually pull dumpsters because we wouldn't even make the last 10% budget cut that year in fiscal year 10. So the contracts have actually technically come down, but if you look at the whole picture, overall everything, you'll see that there's an increase in the utility cost. But when we had to reduce services in doing so. So you'll get, you know, things overflowing in Glendale State Park or other state parks just because we can't dump those dumpsters or we can't have enough to provide for the public. So, but we do have that broken out differently. But we try to be cautious that we flex those so they're, well, even during the flood, we were able to pull, or the flood at Glendale State Park, we were able to pull some of those dumpsters and not be charged for them. So, but we do have those.
Okay, Mr. Bravo. And, Brian, you did give Don a handout for us on these costs. Okay, great. Thank you. Director Simpson?
If there are no more questions on that particular request, then we would move on to priority number six on page 22. Oh, I'm sorry, on page 21, priority number five. And this is to convert three seasonal, they're called TPO1 positions, to one full-time position. And the kind of unique nature of what we refer to as TPO1 positions, they are full-time seasonal positions, but you can multiple fill those positions. This is something that we've done over the years. It allows us to take care of serious personnel issues such as we have with our GIS specialist position without asking you for to grow government and create a new full-time position. And in terms of what this position does and why it's important to state parks, I'll defer to Dominic.
Mr. Bravo?
And Madam Chair, in addition to what Director Simpson said, I guess just as a point of clarification, we normally can, by the way these positions work, can fill almost 250 people within a position, but the cap that's in place caps us at 150, and funding-wise, we're normally able to fund about 200. So we can fill almost 250. We've had funding to be able to do about 200, but the cap has set us at 150. And by converting three of these positions to the one full-time position, that would still allow us to fill within the cap and still keep the funding where we need to provide to the seasonals that we bring on. The justification for this piece is in the past, there was no GIS person solely dedicated to working on any types of maps, and that's what GIS is. It's basically maps. You probably have seen it in the cities and the counties and the towns and at the state level being able to produce maps. But there's a bigger piece in it, and that's the data that's presented within this. Statutorily, we have to provide maps for snowmobile trails, ORV trails, and that's what this position is able to do, is to set up those templates. In addition to that, we're also able to provide the infrastructure within our state parks and historic sites that then by makes the efficiency of being able to correct sprinkler systems, and there's just many layers that any city or town GIS person could probably talk better than I can about it, but there's all the layers that are then kept in mind and within the data set or database of our GIS program. Without having an actual professional person over this type of process, you have to have a degree in GIS, you have to actually know how to work the software, all of that data will basically be lost and we will not meet our statutory obligations. And I am pretty sure that you won't find someone of this caliber being able to fill a seasonal position, because that's currently what we fit put this position in was seasonal in the hopes that at some point in time we'd be able to make it full-time. But that's the big thing, is a GIS position for parks is a vital, vital position. And again, it helps us to actually meet statutory obligations in regards to our trails program. And that's all the OHV and ORV and snowmobile maps that you see all over the place are produced in-house by this position. So I can stand for any questions in regards to that.
And Madam Chair, this was approved by the OCIO.
And the denial by the governor was just based on the 10% cut? The response? I mean, I
would defer to the ANI folks on the reason for the for the recommendation against it.
Richard, do you have any further comment or Karen on that?
Madam Chairman, the governor's position is basically he keeps getting requests from state parks for additional part-time help for the parks, and this request wants to take three of those and convert it to a full-time position. So he recommended denial of it. He doesn't want to make any position changes within the department based on what was approved in the biennial budget request. This request was also not recommended by Governor Meade either. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cox. Any further questions on this? All right, continue.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. The next request is for rescue boats. That's on your page 22. And this is a request that I see as this department taking its experience and translating that into trying to be proactive about what we need to do. An unfortunate but pretty standard aspect of this type of agency is that we do have fatalities that occur when people recreate. We have millions of visitors. You've heard about these things over the years, and unfortunately, and to my chagrin, it seems that every summer there's some either serious issue that takes place from a law enforcement standpoint on the water, fatalities that take place. We've even had folks during the winter season lose their lives falling through the ice. We also had a very serious issue, as has already been referred to, with the flooding at Glendale State Park. There was a fatality last year that had to do with a young man from Game and Fish trying to retrieve a pontoon boat. We went and took our TRW committee. We often rotate those TRW interim meetings around the state, and they had an opportunity to go up and tour Keyhole State Park this last summer, which is another very, very busy recreational area. And unfortunately, a couple of those representatives weren't able to be here earlier this morning. They were going to try to come out and testify on behalf of this. But we brought this forward, this request forward in the budget by their recommendation. When they were out there on the ground and they heard our superintendent talk about the situations that they get into, it seemed convincing to them that, you know, we don't have adequate boats to be able to do our job out on the parks. We have pontoon boats and things that really aren't up to the task. So this is a attempt on our agency's part to respond proactively when situations take place that require us to plan ahead, and that's the reason for these rescue boats. We are the first responders at these parks. Game and Fish does have jurisdiction on the water, but we are the folks that are there. We are the ones that are there when something like this occurs. And I'll stand for questions, or Dominic, you can add.
Representative Pedersen.
Madam Chair, and whoever wants to answer, do you have any rescue boats of any kind that you use now, or would this be brand new? And
this is mostly a new request. Go ahead.
Madam Chair, and basically we have a few, and they're the kind of the small pontoon, not hand-me-down. They're hand-me-down boats is what it is. So they've been surplus boats we've gotten in the past that can't handle some of the actual rescue operations we need, like when the waves are attenuating or things. And that's what these are specific for. I guess the only other piece I would add to what Director Simpson said, and maybe address it a little bit, is on top of being first responders, again, going back to even some of the retirement pieces, is when you look at park rangers, again, they're like the sites and the parks are like little cities. So it's a matter of seconds that count, and we are the ones that are there. And most of them are trained rescue technicians, search and rescue technicians. They're EMS, they're EMT, first responders, they're firefighters. Most of them are wildland firefighter certified, and they're law enforcement officers. So all across the board, they're trained to be able to save lives. I mean, that's the key, is serve and protect. And they're there to make sure that when you're out recreating, you at least have the best to our ability, a safe environment, which includes certain items like this. So we do have in some of our parks pontoon boats and a lot of hand-me-down type items, but it's really shown its face this last year when we had the issue of the Glendale flood, some of the things out at Keyhole Reservoir, that we just don't have adequate equipment to be able to provide those services. And basically, Game and Fish, they're a great partner, and they're right. They do run the surface water, but more likely than not, they request our assistance for certain things, because also within our parks, they aren't able to enforce the same laws we are. They can only enforce certain things. So if they run into drugs or other types of items or domestic violence or something that they need another law enforcement officer's assistance with, we have to try to boat out to them and provide that assistance. So it's a kind of a crucial piece of equipment for us. And again, it's a matter of seconds sometimes when your boat goes over and gets turned over. It's a matter of seconds to save lives, not waiting for Game and Fish to trailer their boat up or to hope that Homeland Security is somewhere in the region or area. We want to make sure we have the boat on the water and we're the ones there in the park to get to them as quickly as possible.
So. Representative Edmonds.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. In the governor's recommendation, and you've touched on it a little bit just in what your comments, you're essentially outlining a whole nother program where you're going to have people on the water actively patrolling and watching, or I assume that you can explain if not. And also he laid out that there is a procedure in place currently with the Game and Fish, and I think you discussed that, as well as Homeland Security. Tell me what you envision with these boats if you are, you know, to serve and protect, if you want to actively be out there checking and seeing when something happens. How do you see this all coming about? And besides the boat, what else may you ultimately need?
Mr. Bravo?
Madam Chair and Representative, of course.
Edmund.
Basically, again, like I said, most of the parks already have a boat, and most of them are already on the water. We don't actively patrol, per se, because, again, Game and Fish is supposed to be out patrolling on certain reservoirs for those regulations that they're supposed to be out there for. When it comes to actual search and rescue or emergencies, they're not on the water. Most of those happen at night when people have been drinking or deciding to go out, that they're just out on their boat in the evenings. And that's when I won't say we're actively patrolling, but as soon as a call comes in, it's us as first responders that already have a boat on the water. So, for instance, at Glendale, it's pretty close to the superintendent's residence. He jumps in the boat and heads out to assist whoever he can. But currently, when the water's choppy or whatever, the pontoon boat, he can't safely go out there himself, so they wait till either Game and Fish arrives, or again, I have yet to see, and Bill can correct me, I don't think I've ever seen Homeland Security boats out on our reservoir pieces. And this is Bill Westerfield, my chief of law enforcement, also chief of ARP operations. So.
Mr. Westerfield?
Madam Chairman, essentially, if we wait for Homeland Security, and I have never seen them on the water with a boat, they do have other facilities that show up. Game and Fish works the reservoirs part of the time. County search and rescues come out, and all three of those, should they show up, are usually a search and recovery. I have yet to see any of them show up and rescue anybody because of the time element.
And I think to follow up on Ms. Edmonds, Representative Edmonds' question is, have you, based on the governor's recommendation, put together a plan or done more research with your parks as to what the plan would look like and the cost and in managing that?
And I guess, Madam Chair, it's not a matter of additional cost per se. The piece is, like I said, most of them already have boats, so we have the fuel. We already have trained operators of the boats, so they have to get certified. I mean, we have all the rescue equipment. The problem is most of these boats that are the hand-me-downs are just not adequate enough. And for those sites that don't have boats, it would be that they would come in and just with our normal law enforcement training would just be an added component. So the cost really is just the equipment. We already have the fuel, the rescue gear, all those things in place as a system. So we're and again, we're usually the ones that are out there helping to recover It was even one, our pontoon boat that at the last fatality was the one that recovered the body to be brought out of the water. It's just, again, in the choppy waters at Glendo and the wind or Keyhole, having true rescue boats on the water would be better and would save seconds versus us having to wait the next day when the water isn't choppy and everyone actually finally arrives, game and fish and everyone else. So the system is in place. We just don't have the equipment.
Right. And Mr. Bravo, so you're guesstimating or you have a bid as to the seven boats costing approximately $71,000 a piece or $61,000?
Madam Chair, that's exactly it. We got a couple, not really per se bids. We got the different types of rescue boats used in the country and got the different prices for the one that would make the most sense for our types of water.
Okay. Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Is there a way, you've got seven reservoir parks, could you scale that back to the most used, Glendo and you said Seminole and or Keyhole?
Mr. Bravo.
Madam Chair, again, any piece given would be utilized to its maximum, but we could prioritize which highest. I mean, Glendo, obviously, Keyhole, we could do the reservoirs that are the highest use and maybe the ones that have had the highest incident of fatalities and boating-related accidents.
I think, Mr. Bravo, what we need is a more accurate figure as to the boat that you've chosen and what that looks like. We need you to prioritize the reservoirs, and we need to have a recap of the incidents, whether it was a fatality or an injury in the last season, if you can do that, or the previous season.
Yeah, could do that.
Thank you. Representative Edmonds.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just one more, and this is probably more just for my own knowledge. Game and Fish, you said, has jurisdiction on the water. Do you currently, is anyone patrolling, and I don't even know if this, I will plead total ignorance here, I don't even know if we have any kind of rules about drinking and boating, speed limits on the lake, that sort of stuff. Who has jurisdiction over that?
Yeah. Representative Edmonds, you need to be camping at our state parks. Mr. Bravo.
And actually, just so I'm totally clear and don't fumble, I'll let my chief ranger answer.
Mr. Westerfield?
Mr. Chairman, Madam Chairman, Representative Edmonds, Game and Fish has the boating enforcement statutes through Title 41. They do an active BUI program, Boating Under the Influence program. We assist them any way we can. With backup or breathalyzers or hauling their prisoners to jail for them sometimes, but they statutorily have the primary enforcement effort on the water.
And Madam Chair and Representative Edmonds, just as a follow-up, though, as I had mentioned earlier, those are just their regulations. If for some reason they run into drugs, methamphetamine, or some other, you know, firearms, other things, they would either have to call a deputy sheriff or us, and almost 100% is us, that would then have to come out to them and assist them in that portion. So,
thank you, Madam Chairman. The next request is for farm and shop equipment. This is on your page 23. And this has been the mechanism by which this agency has requested equipment that's worn out. I can attest that the division is extremely frugal in this regard. And we really let this equipment get to the point where it's just kind of at the very, very end before we ask to replace it. We're always looking for the best deals. Kind of the pattern has been we make an itemized list of requests, and they are in priority order. And the superintendents and regional superintendents come up with this list by consensus. And we come forward with the budget request. In recent years, all of those requests have been partially funded, and basically the governor has recommended that we take, so to speak, the money that he's willing to allocate and go as far down that priority list as possible. So what we've done is, as you can imagine, the things that have been just under that priority line that we weren't able to fund kind of get bumped up to the top in subsequent budgets, and that's kind of the phenomenon that you're seeing here. So these are requests for replacement of crucial equipment that's worn out and needs to be replaced.
And Mr. Director, these are the top priorities, starting with one on page 24 there. So
that's correct, Madam Chairman, on top of page 24.
Okay, great. This has, and just to verify, this has been a historical practice with their equipment. So any further questions on this request? Hey, Director Simpson.
Madam
Oh, excuse me, Senator Hastert.
Just on your, do you have bids for the equipment, or is it just a estimate, or?
Madam Chair, Senator Hastert, it's just an estimate based on what they kind of go out and look at the different prices for those pieces, send them in to us, and then we verify and put that amount.
Thank you.
And Madam Chair, just for, so the committee knows, we've tried to be very definitive on exact pieces, but even like the John Deere tractor at Hot Springs, the actual whole tractor gave out. So although we still need a backhoe attachment for the hand-me-down tractor we were able to get through surplus, I'm not sure if it's a John Deere, maybe a Case, but just so the committee knows, that's why hopefully we get a little flexibility in those pieces. But yeah.
Okay, great. All right, let's continue on.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Next and last request is actually under the capital construction portion of the budget, which is on your page 30. And this was for the ability to bring fire suppression and electricity to the state's flagship historic site, which is South Pass City State Historic Site, and the Carissa Mine. And I'm not sure how many of you are familiar with the recent years and the investment that's been put in place in terms of the Carissa. If you ever have a chance to visit South Pass City, I certainly think you would be bowled over by the project. But basically through the Abandoned Mine Lands Association and other folks who have been interested in really trying to make this our flagship site in the area, we have the Carissa Mine now poised to become a major tourist attraction where we can actually take people into this historic gold mine. It's unique in the United States of America, and that is the only gold mine of its type that's still completely intact along with the town site and the actual town buildings themselves. This is really our flagship historic site for the state of Wyoming, and I think it has tremendous potential in terms of our role in tourism. Problem is that we have this site, and there is no capacity to provide electricity or water up to that site. A case in point as to why I listed this as our number one priority is that we had vandalism last year. As you know, it's a remote site. We don't have a lot of staff. And they're not always up there, the Carissa Mine itself. We had some folks, we suspect youngsters, break in and do a considerable amount of damage. Had they decided to light a match there, it's very possible that that entire site could have been lost. So the concern here is, at the very minimum, to be able to provide fire suppression up at that site. This was a $1,798,000 budget request that's itemized, that was done by virtue of a projection that I believe AML did for us.
Yes, AML.
And Mr. Director, if you could just make certain that the committee has the most recent brochure on the Carissa Mine in hand, and then just to visit with Mr. Cathcart to make certain that he's up to date on this issue so we can review it when he comes in on capital construction.
We will do so,
okay,
Madam Chairman. Thank you.
And then Senator Meyer wanted to bring up, you may have some other points before we end the session, on the Glendale State Park flooding plan, if you could give us an update on that. I think all the committee members should have a handout on that. It is number 29 for Agency 24.
Madam Chair and committee members, originally in our supplemental budget, we actually had a Glendo piece in there, but then pretty quickly afterwards, we realized that insurance was going to be able to cover what it cost to mitigate the whole process. So we worked with risk management, and we were able to get all the costs covered. We had to eat a couple upgrades because we want to make sure going further that we'll be able to handle another flood. However, in the last couple of days, we have new information from the Bureau of Reclamation that is pretty sure we may have another flood this year. So that put us into a kind of an emergency state and wanted to bring it to your attention. And the reason that we brought this contingency plan for flooding, the one map shows where we were at as of July 4th. And you can see all the areas that we normally have camping in and other areas for boating and everything was pretty inundated with flooding water. And so basically it shut down most of the park. We did our best. We worked with a whole bunch of different folks in the community and did our best for capacity, but we still had large fiscal impacts to the surrounding communities. So everything from Cheyenne all the way to Douglas, even up to Casper, businesses were feeling the strain. And, of course, there at Glendo itself, they were feeling the strain of the lack of capacity we had there at Glendo. So this contingency plan has different levels. One is to be able to create an overflow camping area in our buffalo pasture, being able to bring in temporary sanitation stuff, so, Port-a-John toilets, and then also some Whiskey Gulch boat ramp upgrades, so we actually have overflow parking. If you were out there, there was no place to actually park your boat or trailers. It was just a pretty large mess. And then, of course, table and grills. Even though we tried to pull them as quickly as we could, we had approximately 2 days' notice to let us know that the water was going to be pushing into Glendo, so it didn't allow a lot of time for us to be able to pull picnic tables and grills that are normally chained down and move them around. So this is to add more tables and grills. And then, of course, at the end, I know it's a big price ticket, but the $1,100,000, we're pretty sure insurance and risk management won't cover us. They already covered us this year. If we have another flood, and the fact that our facilities and structures are in the flood zone, it may be very difficult for us to actually cover that cost through insurance this upcoming year. So I wanted to make sure it was on your radar. I'm not sure if it is a request or how that works, but I just wanted to make sure that if we were able to come up with that type of funding, we would actually be able to increase our capacity moving forward, and hopefully not impact businesses or ourselves in regards to how horrible this last year was in regards to the Glendo flood.
And Mr. Bravo, have you apprised the Governor Mead of this issue, this recent development, and this handout?
Madam Chair, we did. We spoke with Carrie Gray, the Chief of Staff, on Friday, and she received this handout letting her know of the situation.
Senator Meyer, I'll let you go ahead first.
Madam Chairman, it was really devastating to the Glendo in that area up there. We had a field trip that Senator Anderson was on, and I believe Frank Peasley also attended that. The flood did catch them a little, I think, by surprise, but I think that they have some things in here that I think would help mitigate it. A lot of the tables, I think, if there was a plan in place such as this little backhoe track type thing where they could actually get out and move the tables back easily, I think we could have kept that park open. There was also a lot of, misinformation and then some bad communication between DOT and state parks. The DOT had flashing signs that the park was closed, and at one point in time that was being contemplated, but it never was. It was flooded, but they took steps to increase the capacity, but the signs never changed. And so even at Douglas and down and coming up I-25, there were some problems there. So I think that we found out that those problems do exist in this time period, but I think we really need to develop a good contingency plan, and this is something that normally doesn't happen but once every 30 years, but it looks like it's going to be back-to-back this year. But I think we need to get it in place, need to get all of these things down and set up so hopefully it doesn't happen this year, but if 25 years from now it does happen, then we're set up and ready to handle it. Because I think we need to really concentrate in that. I think that relationship between state parks and the local communities and the business that it creates or doesn't create when things go wrong, and because there's a lot of economic spinoff from our state parks, you really don't really appreciate it until it's gone. And this flood really, really hurt Glendo and the surrounding areas. So I think this is a good step. I'm not sure about the $1,000,001, and for myself personally, I'd like to see what we could do to make some of those high water permanent rather than makeshift. Maybe a discussion about if we didn't have quite as much capacity that was makeshift and put some of them in that was a permanent high water so people would always know there was high water campsites there. But I think that's something that we can work on. But we do need to get something in place, and I think this is a good first step to at least move in that direction.
Further questions of the director? Mr. Simpson, do you have anything further to say on state parks?
No, thank you, Madam Chairman. Basically, when I describe this department, if I was asked to put it in just a few words, I'd say we're a small part of government, but a big part of life. It's a great pleasure to be part of this agency, and thank you for your consideration of these requests.
Thank you very much, Mr. Simpson and group, and thank you for coming back. And I'd like to just go right on into Agency 211, Board of Equalization, so we can see how much we can get done here yet on our break. Have a great day. That's correct. If I give you a break, it'll be time to go back into the House floor. Carolyn, can you check outside? Oh, yep, there's Mr. Roberts. Okay. Tom, we're just trying to get you through before we go back in. Yes, Okay, everyone. We have Mr. Roberts and Mr. Olmstead here on behalf of the Board of Equalization on their supplemental request. And Mr. Roberts, if you could just take a quick few minutes to educate the committee and then your request, that would be great.
Okay, thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Tom Roberts. I'm chairman of the State Board. With me today is Steve Olmstead. He's the vice chairman. We do have a third member. It's Debbie Smith. Some of you may remember Debbie Nagel. She was a longtime assessor in Albany County. Steve wanted me to just say she sends her regrets, which she does. She's on vacation in Ecuador, and she planned the vacation before we knew about this. So our request today by the State Board is really simple. Actually, we're not asking for any money. We would just like to move some money. Yes, Representative Stewart, that's correct. We're not asking for money. We want to move some 100 series money down to 200 series. I think the total change is $14,390. And the reason that we're asking to do this is we have a board statistician. Our statistician left us in August or September, to pursue other opportunities, higher education. She's working on her PhD in statistics and economics. We had a vacancy. We hired a new statistician, and the new statistician, even though he's a very intelligent young man from Tennessee, he needs to go to school to learn the CAMA system, the system that the assessors use to value property. And then we also want to have a couple of seminars. The board actually has presented one. Steve and I and our attorney have presented a seminar last week for assessors, commissioners, county attorneys. There was a county treasurer there, county commissioners. There were 17 lawyers. We had 77 people basically learning about county boards of equalization, what assessors have to do, so on and so forth. Basically, that's it. We want to move the $14,000 from 100 series to the 200 series, and as you all know, we can't spend that 100 series money because it's personnel. If we move it to 200 series, then we can spend it. We can send our statistician to school. We plan to do another seminar, and I believe, did we itemize that? Uh, when we had a conversation with the governor, yes, we did. It's on the ninth page of the supplemental budget. 5,490 in training, in-state travel is 7,000, out-of-state travel is 1,900. That's the 14,390. The in-state travel of 7,000 is, we also want our statistician to go around and visit with as many of the county assessors as he can, preferably all of them at some point in time. That takes in-state travel money. The out-of-state travel is, for those of you that aren't aware, the assessors use a computer-assisted mass appraisal system called CAMA. It's designed, built, and sold to the state of Wyoming by a company in Fort Collins, and they have agreed to offer a class for our statistician and four or five new assessors staff, but it's in Fort Collins because that's where their headquarters are. It's immensely cheaper for us to go there than it is for them to come up here. So that's basically it. The training is our seminars. And we can do a lot of online training now, but they still charge you for it. So I'd answer questions, comments.
Thank you, Mr. Roberts. Any questions of the committee? Great. Thank you for your efficiency. I appreciate that very much. And
all right,
we'll give you a call if we have further questions on that.
Okay. We'll come back. And, yes, Jeb, I didn't ask for any more money.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
We're going to go ahead and have a good afternoon. We're going to go ahead and try to take in the three licensing boards, Board of Midwifery, 36, Board of Medicine, 52, and Board of Nursing, 54, if we could take care of those. Before we go back in, and then our plan will be to try to come off the floor about 3:30, could be 4 o'clock. We do have one pertinent issue on the floor that we need to address as a group, and then we'll start up with Military Department 7, followed by A&I, which possibly we would have to reschedule. Thank you. Okay, we have Senator Von Platern.
Will you be coming over to the Senate to get us if you have a varying time of starting?
Right. So... you want to take the message back that we'll start at 3:30 with your call?
So we should plan on 3:30.
Right. Okay. And I'll come and I'll get a message to you.
Okay, that's great. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you. Good afternoon. Are you Veronica?
Yes.
If you'd kind of identify yourself and then go through your exceptional request.
My name is Veronica Skoransky, and I am with the Department of Administration and Information, Professional Licensing Administration Section, and currently the acting as the Executive Director for the Board of Midwifery. A supplemental request is issued at this time based on passage of the statute in 2010. That original statute contained a $20,000 appropriation for the first half of the biennium for fiscal year 2011, required the submission of a supplemental budget for fiscal year 2012, and that's what's presented before you today. The figures in the supplemental budget are represent the minimum amount required to administer this licensing board. They are based on figures for expenses, historical data that we have in administering other very small licensing boards. Includes the 200 series is mostly for travel for the board members. I don't anticipate many expenditures for supplies, mostly meeting expenses in that 200 series. The 300 series is a cost allocation that all non-general funded agencies pay to the general fund. The 500 series represents 1/17 of the rent expense on the place on the space that we currently occupy. The 800 series expenditure represents the amount that the board would be paying back to A&I for providing administrative services that include staff time, copy charges, ITD expenses, computer expenses, general supplies, printing, things along those lines. And then the contractual services would be for any expenses such as should we have a hearing expense, it would cover a court reporter. I don't anticipate any major hearings during the first 2 years or so of the board's being in existence. Right now, we are concentrating on finalizing the rules so that the board can begin issuing licenses.
Representative Stewart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I see that these revenues are generated from your special revenue fees collected. What is the cost per license for each license?
Madam Chair and Representative, it's very difficult to gauge at this time since all boards are required to be self-sufficient. The total revenues would have to be generated by the people paying the licensing fees. My last discussion with the board is they anticipate maybe 5 license holders the first year, maybe 10 in 3 years. So the license fees are going to have to be fairly high per person, and I just don't know if that's going to price some people out of the profession.
A
follow-up. I don't know how to. What would you predict if you find that the fee would have to be $2,000 to $3,000 a person, and no one can afford that? Would you expect a special request through Appropriations Committee, or?
Madam Chair, yes, I believe that that would be the board's intent. If they were not able to generate enough revenues to support their activities, that they may seek an appropriation to assist them along that way.
When are you anticipating having a fee schedule established?
Madam Chair, right now in the draft rules and regs, the proposed rules, which were out for public comment period, which ended December 31st, we set the maximum fee at $2,000. The board anticipates by setting the actual fee at $1,800 per license, and that would be an annual fee. As soon as those rules are filed with the Secretary of State's office, then we will begin accepting applications for licensure. We'll have a better handle on how many actual license holders we're talking about, but the numbers are going to be very minimum.
Any further questions of the committee? Well, thank you, and welcome to your first appropriations.
Thank you very much.
Good luck.
Thank you.
I think we have the Board of Medicine up now, Agency 52, Mr. Bonenblust. Would you pronounce your last name again for me?
Bonenblust. That was close enough, believe me. I'll take it. So.
Okay.
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, I am Kevin Bonenblust. I'm the Executive Director of the Board of Medicine. I have with me our fiscal specialist, Mary Catalier. I bring her because she actually can do math and I can't. I hope that this will be a very straightforward and brief conversation. The board, as you probably well know, licenses and regulates the practice of physicians and physician assistants in the state. And it is a 100% self-funded board. We receive no general fund appropriations. We are a small office. Prior to this position coming in, we had 3 full-time employees that were approved as part of our budget, plus 2 AWEC positions, one of which was filled by me since my position is an at-will and the board can excuse me from my duties anytime it wants to. The other was unfilled and had been previously used from time to time to deal with seasonal increases in work due to license renewals, because all of our license renewals come due at the end of the fiscal year, June 30th. So it can be oppressive work. The reason why we're asking for this position, we did originally have a position that was a fiscal manager or specialist, I should say. When that position came open 2 years ago, actually 3 years ago now, the board was very concerned that we needed to focus some serious efforts on how we were handling investigations. So they directed me to convert that position to an investigator position, which has paid great dividends for us. As you can imagine, when we start investigating complaints against physicians, sometimes they get pretty detailed, and there's a considerable amount of medical records, things like that, interviews that occur. We right now clear about 120 complaints against physicians and PAs per year. So there's a pretty good caseload that comes through. Many of those amount to nothing because it turns out to be either something the board doesn't have enforcement power over. It's oftentimes basically a communication issue between physician and patient, that sort of thing. But we still have the obligation to investigate and follow up on any complaint that a patient, a citizen, files against one of our licensees. when we converted that position to a investigator position, then what we tried to do was try to farm out some of the duties to other agencies. One agency that helped us out for a while was Ms. Skaransky's office. They did supply physical services to us and that sort of thing. The problem we ran into was a combination of difficulty just getting the translation between offices, getting materials back and forth. And the other was it only took care of part of our needs. In addition to being a physical person, we also have HR needs. We also have management issues related to our database, which we are desperately trying to upgrade from about 1980 to hopefully 2010 or 2011. And then in addition, we have considerable call for our lists for statistical analyses. We've been working, for instance, with the Joint Labor Committee through the interim. They've got concerns about how quickly we license positions. We've been generating those things. So all of this led us to where we are. We'd love to be able to reallocate staff time, but we are also in a considerable boom in physician licensure in this state. 2 years ago, we licensed 238 physicians. Last year, we licensed 300. Actually, 2 years ago, we licensed 300. This most recent year, we licensed about 210. We had a bit of a drop-off, but we already have quite literally more than 200 applications in process right now. So our licensing staff is more than busy. They're trying like heck to keep up and with the expectations of, for instance, the Labor Committee on how quickly they license positions. So with that, we felt it was important to make sure we did go ahead and keep this position in-house and keep it go ahead and get it funded. So we did B11 it in previously. At the recommendation of the Budget Office, we did ask to go ahead and have it put in as a supplemental, and we would build it into our future biennial requests. So I guess the bottom line for this is twofold. One is this is strictly special fund monies. It is not appropriate, not general funds monies. The board is fully capable of covering this cost within its revenues, and net it will mean no increase in positions. It will move us from having two AWACs to one, and then move us from three regular positions to four. Hopefully, other than a slight shifting of funds, it's not going to be a big ripple, but we wanted to get the committee's review and hopefully approval of that. With that, I'd answer any questions if there are any.
Thank you, Director. And would you be able to get us a list of just kind of that growth of requests for physician licensors for us?
Madam Chairman, I'd be delighted to do that.
I think that would be, to me, that is good news. I'd like to know how many of these individuals are going to be practicing in Wyoming at some what level that would be at. I know in the past we've had licensing for part-time or not practicing and full-time. I think that would be a good piece of information for JAC to have.
And Madam Chairwoman, I'd be glad to do that. I would say that out of the physicians we license, both those that are currently licensed and those that are coming in, only about 40% actually moved to Wyoming. What we're seeing is a considerable growth in telemedicine, in what's called locum tenens or temporary practice, and especially in physicians from surrounding metropolitan areas, whether it's Denver, Rapid City, Salt Lake City, Billings, who are doing part-time practice in the state to bring more specialized services. We'll be glad to get you those numbers.
Well, I think that would be helpful for many of us that live on a border. We realize that that's part of it. But,
it's very interesting
it's
times.
Still good news to be able to have that service.
Certainly.
Representative Stewart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Kevin, what is the cost per the fee for licensure per MD?
Director.
Madam Chairman, Representative Stewart, at this point, we're in a conversion because as part of our work with the Labor Committee, we're kind of doing away with the freestanding application for a temporary license. So we've combined what was a $400 license fee with a $200 temporary license fee. It's going to be $600 total, which is pretty much in line with what surrounding states are on physician licensure. Then annual license renewal is approximately $250. All right, not approximately, I should say. It is $250. That we've been able to hold steady on, and with our revenues with increased number of physicians, we've not had to increase that to accommodate additional things that we're doing in our agency.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a follow-up comment, I guess, to put that into perspective and comparing revenues that could be generated between an MD and a midwife, $2,000 fee is somewhat exorbitant. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Right. But, Mr. Director, that's based on the number of physicians that you have paying the licensing.
Madam Chairwoman, that's correct. And Representative Stewart, that's a sage observation because all licensing boards are charged with being self-supporting.
Right.
And, of course, we could roll them together, but there's a lot of politics involved in placing certain boards within other boards, as I'm sure you are well aware. So,
Mr. Director, I'm not ready to do that this session.
All right. I'd rather kiss a porcupine than do that. So.
All right. Thank you. If there aren't any further questions of the Board of Medicine, we'll move on to the Board of Nursing.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. And if you just want to bring that, Kevin, to Mr. Shepherd or Mrs. Johnson, sure, that information, that'd be great.
Right away.
Appreciate it. Okay. We have the Board of Nursing and Ms. Getter.
Actually.
No, you don't look like it.
I really don't, do I?
Right.
Actually, Madam Chairwoman, my name is Todd Berger. I am the Assistant Executive Director with the Board of Nursing. And with me is Cindy Stillon, who is our Fiscal Coordinator.
So do you spell Berger with a U or with an E?
We must be related, I think.
At some point, somewhere along the line. Okay, great. If you would like to continue with your request, please.
Certainly, Madam Chair. Basically, our request is to transfer two temporary positions, AWACS positions, to full-time positions with benefits. 3 years ago, we had an enormous backlog of complaints and cases requiring substantial effort and prosecution to get caught up. We did catch up with the use of these two AWACS employees. We have become compliant with all the national reporting agencies, and we have reduced the time to handle complaints from over 1 year to approximately a little less than 4 months now. We're reducing the time it takes from initiation of a complaint to final disposition. The situation now is that our workload requires the continuing support of these two staffers. In the past 2 years, we have gone through three of these compliance specialists and the assistant. And our third compliance specialist is set to retire soon in a few months. The training involved in bringing these people up to speed and understanding the details involved in investigating and handling the compliance issues is substantial. And keeping these people in our office and not losing their expertise is essential for us to fulfill our mission. I would like to just remind that, as with other licensing agencies, money will not come out of the general fund. We are a self-sustaining licensing board operating on our own licensing revenue. And basically that is our request, that we transition these AWACS employees to full-time with benefits.
Committee, any questions of Mr. Berger?
Madam Chair, I think just for
Representative Harshman.
Where's Berger from? That was my first question. Is that Central Europe or where is that?
Alsace-Lorraine, so that
and actually
German-French border.
Sure. Yeah.
And French, it's actually Berger.
Mm-hmm. It would
really?
Be the mayor of the town.
And a few wars fought over that little strip of land. But back to appropriations, but... In our continuing quest to learn more, I would like to just kind of repeat those same questions that you and our sage Representative Stewart asked, just on the costs, and then how's the trends looking? I mean, we put a lot into, you know, getting nurses to come to this state, training nurses. How are we looking numbers-wise?
Monsieur Berger?
Madam Chairwoman. Basically, our licensing basis is increasing every year. It seems like when we get to the renewal period, which we have just been through, we seem to have a pullback, and I think that's responsible basically to people CNAs leaving the profession, nurses maybe moving to other places. We seem to have a contraction of our total numbers and then an expansion over the next year greater than. So we're taking, you know, two steps forward and one step back every year as far as our total number. Right now we have over, for 2010, we had over 16,000 licensees from CNAs up to the advanced practice nurse category.
Follow up.
Madam Chair, thank you. How would that compare just to a few years ago? I mean, two years ago.
Representative Harshman, can we go to page 11 of your budget request? Would those be the accurate numbers, your statistics on that, to help us?
Yes, Madam Chair. Those are actual numbers that we have for the last 5 years. I forgot to turn the page. I'm sorry. We have, with that many licensees, we do have quite a task to handle complaints and watch many of the aspects of public safety. What we like to do is make sure that any substantial complaint that we receive is handled as immediately as possible so that that person may receive help or is not a danger to the public at that point.
And can you remind us again what the time frame was for training someone to be able to address the compliance issues?
Madam Chair, I came on in July. Right now I am uncertain of the time frame for training, but we have had this will be our third compliance consultant in the last 2 years. Generally takes, what would you say? 5 to 6 months probably to bring someone up to speed in how the office works, how the compliance rules work, hearings, and working with the Attorney General's office and getting coordinated with them in how this proceeds.
All right. Committee, any further questions of the Nursing Board? Representative Stewart.
Well, if they could follow up with the cost per license.
Certainly.
Certainly, Madam Chair, Representative Stewart. Generally, let's see, I believe our licensing fees right now are around $250 for nursing. It is renewal fees are $50 for the CNAs, and the prices, the costs vary depending upon whether it's an APRN, an advanced practice registered nurse. They pay a licensing fee and a supplemental fee for their recognition as an advanced practice nurse. So the fee structure ranges from $50 from the low end for the certified nursing assistants up to the LPNs, RNs, and then APRNs. It's a graduated fee up to about $250.
Okay. All right, Mr. Berger, I think we are set.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, committee. We'll plan to be back at 3:30. I'll advise you on the floor if we have to be delayed on that to come back, and we'll hear from the military department. And I'll talk to Mr. Cathcart here to see about scheduling.
Congratulations, and I'm sorry I didn't recognize you earlier.
Oh, that's okay. I'm sure you've had a lot of work.
Great to meet you.
I actually married him, so what I've been to.